Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. A quick preview of the docket today. Tomorrow is the day Lori Vallow is back in court. Will it be more delays, or is the case actually moving forward? Barry Morphew is back in court on April 19th as well for a pretrial readiness conference. Who is going to blink? I'll explain a couple of things to you. A bizarre case of a homicide of this 51-year-old mother of two. Okay? Crazy. Then we have a story of a 14-year-old girl who was determined not to be a victim. Next, we have an update on the Cassie Carley matter. Now, a 15-year-old boy sets fire to his house, and the police believe it was intentional. And guess what? His sister dies. Okay? Then we'll have an example of a side hustle gone bad. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. All right, aficionados, let's get to it. First, thanks for watching. You know the drill. Subscribe if you have not. Like the video if you did. Leave me a comment and hit that bell so you receive notifications when we put up new content. Remember, you can listen to us on your favorite podcasting app by simply typing in Crime Talk with Scott Reich. Now, please support those who support the channel. Today, our favorite background subscription service. That's right. Please. Go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right, before we open the docket, let's take a moment and just think about what today is. That's right. It's Monday, April 18th, 2022. Now, usually it's April 15th, but tax day got extended today. That's right. It's tax day. All right, now let me give you an example, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, first of all, you see this? See this mark here right on my forehead? That's my brain exploding, okay? Stress, right there. Stress, right there. Because see, look, when I do it, see how it goes right there on my line on my face? Stress, that's my head literally exploding, okay? Why? How could you be stressed, Scott? You have a heartbeat that is like so low, nothing stresses you out. Right? How could this possibly happen? You handle cases of the utmost importance. What could possibly stress you out? That's right. Tax day, ladies and gentlemen. It's tax day. Now, let's take a quick moment to review an example of some elements of a criminal offense. Let's say, for example, you were walking down the street and somebody came up to you and said, put their finger in your back, and they said, you're going to give me 35% of everything you make for the rest of your life. And then they went ahead and took everything out of your pockets. They maybe came by your house, right? What would we call that in the criminal world? Oh, that's right. We would call that an aggravated robbery. At a minimum, robbery, and even below that, theft, okay? Well, the only difference in that example is that, well, the government uses a force of threat to get you to pay taxes. And see, ladies and gentlemen, why my head is exploding right here? Because it's tax day. All right? That's just the way it is. It's tax day. Take a deep breath. It'll be okay. It'll be okay. It's okay. It's just money. You can go make more. And give 35% of it to the government. It makes you wonder why you want to even work hard. Let's just do nothing. I'll just take some of whatever somebody else is paying and enjoy it. It'd be great. What do I need to do anything for? All right, let's go ahead and open the docket for Monday, April 18th, 2022. First on the docket, Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell. There's a hearing tomorrow for both of them. The first hearing in the morning is in regards to the change of venue. Now, it'll be curious to see if Lori Vallow's attorneys show up to this hearing, since technically their case isn't stayed, but also technically they haven't even been arraigned to enter a not guilty plea. They haven't asked or been ordered by the court to file any motions. So really their motions, save for all these issues being resolved, are completely not ripe yet. They haven't come up yet. But obviously Chad Daybell's case has been going on for a long time while Lori Vallow was off at the state mental hospital. So it'll be interesting. But more than likely, Lori Vallow will not be there, or her attorney, and whatever ruling takes place will probably be applied to her, even though she's not participating. Gets kind of complicated. And I assure you, if there's convictions, it'll be even more complicated, because do they just go through a motion in the future if she files the same motion? And what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. Does she get the same due process that Chad Daybell was getting? Because he's going to be there. Well, then in the afternoon, we have the arraignment. So the question is it going to be moving forward, or is it going to be maybe not moving so forward so quickly, right? We know that Mr. Archibald has been on the case now for several months, basically the entire time that Lori Vallow has been at the state hospital. And I'm assuming he has been working diligently on this case. However, late last week, he asked for another attorney to be appointed as co-counsel on the case. And guess what? It's going to take him time to get up to speed to be an effective counsel, and one that has a, you know, as a defendant has a right to have effective assistance of counsel under the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution. Is it fair to just let one attorney be prepared? Shouldn't both of them be prepared? Will the judge make her go forward? Will he grant a continuance? Oh, so many things that we have to look out for tomorrow. And what's the one problem? They're not live streaming it. Yes, that's right. So we're looking at schedules. We're looking at the weather. We shall see. You know, maybe we would have taken a different plane, but I don't know. The United States government has all our money now, so we don't really know. We were lucky if we could maybe take a skateboard there. That's just the way it goes, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Next on the docket, Barry Morphew. He, too, has a pretrial conference coming up tomorrow. And what is the significance of that? Well, it is a situation of who is going to blink first. Now, remember, this trial is scheduled to start in literally 2 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, 2 weeks. The prosecution had their case gutted by the judge, basically prohibiting 14 of the 16 expert witnesses that the prosecution had endorsed. Okay? So, is the prosecution going to be able to go forward, where in their motions they stated it was the court's order was tantamount to a dismissal? Is that what they intend to do? Because this is a serious date, because the court needs to know if they're going to inconvenience jurors, hundreds of them, who will put their lives on hold, not take care of their families for weeks, so that they can come and be a dutiful, diligent juror. So the judge isn't going to take some motion to dismiss at the last moment on the morning of trial very kindly. Now, you may think, oh, the defense has really got the prosecution, don't they? Well, kind of they do, right? The prosecution could ask for a little bit of a continuance, but the court, I don't see, is going to do that. But there's one thing that I noticed when I was going through the minute orders in this case, and well, there are a lot of minute orders in the case because there were lots and lots of motions filed in this case. But the one thing that I noticed that I thought, wow, if there's one thing that's going to screw this case up for the defense, it's one thing. They have filed numerous, they being the defense, have filed numerous motions to compel attendance of an out-of-state witness. Okay, so quick little jurisdictional issue here, okay? The powers of the Colorado District Court in the Barry Morphew matter only extend to, well, all the way to the borders of the state of Colorado. The court has really no authority outside the state of Colorado in any way. They certainly have no authority to, say, comply with this subpoena that we are going to mail to you or hand to you. It means nothing because the person is not in the state of Colorado, the court has no jurisdiction over them. So what does the defense have to do? Well, to get this motion to compel attendance of an out-of-state witness, it is a pain in the patootie. Let's just put it that way, okay? First, what have you got to do? Well, you got to find out who your witness is. You call them and say, hey, would you accept subpoena of service so that we could have you come to court? Obviously, we'll pay for all your travel arrangements, airfare, per diem, rental car, you name it. We'll take care of everything. We just need you to come to court. If that person says no, well, then you got to do what the defense is going to do. Or if you think they're going to show up and you don't subpoena them and go through all this rigmarole to get them there, guess what? And they don't show up, you have no remedy. You have no witness. The defense has maybe committed malpractice, right? So what does the defense have to do? First, you call the witness, you identify them, and then you have to basically go and hire another attorney in that jurisdiction where the witness is. Let's just say they're in Massachusetts. So you have to hire an attorney. You have to get the person to help them get a process server in Massachusetts. You have to get the court to say, yes, I am going to grant your motion to compel attendance. And basically, they take this paper. It's basically an order. It's triple certified. And you serve the person. Well, you set up a court date in another jurisdiction for that court to order that person into court via subpoena and say, here's a valid order. I'm ordering you as a court in Massachusetts to go comply with the order in Colorado. How easy do you think that is? It is a pain in the butt, okay? But that's how the defense and even the government can compel witnesses out of state or like, I'm not coming, come get me. Well, and the thing is when the court in that other jurisdiction, in our example, says, say Massachusetts, says you must show up, the state or the defense is going to pay for your tickets and things of that nature. And if you don't show up, the state of Massachusetts would hold that person in contempt of court. But it's difficult. And remember, all of the people that the defense wants to call in from out of state, the list is long. A lot of it has to do with DNA, and coordinating that is going to be difficult. So we shall see who blinks, okay? Now, my gut feeling is the defense cannot blink. They need to go with whatever they have, okay, on the morning of trial and not ask for a continuance. Why? Because if they ask for a continuance, they'd have to waive speedy trial. And if they waive speedy trial, then all of a sudden, all those issues that were really big issues like discovery compliance, the government has time to fix them and correct them. And suddenly the prejudice would be gone. So if anyone's going to blink tomorrow in the Barry Morphew matter, I don't think it's going to be the defense. At this point, they simply cannot risk it. For lack of a better term, they're winning. And we'll see if the prosecution blinks first. It's going to get good, ladies and gentlemen, so keep watching. Next on the docket, okay? I got a feeling this is going to be a big case. This just has all the makings of something that's very intriguing, okay? Suburban house mom murdered at her home while her husband's out of town with the other kid, but video of somebody hauling her away in a hockey bag? Yeah, this is weird. Okay, so the mother, Orsalia Gall, okay? She's a mother in Queens, New York, and she was stabbed more than at least 60 times by a killer who apparently texted her husband from her phone, stating, quote, "Your wife sent me to jail some years ago. I'm back." Now, Orsalia Gall's body was found a half mile from her family home in Forest Hills, Queens, stuffed inside a hockey duffel bag. Now, the police believe that the killer stabbed her more than 60 times in the basement of their home. No suspects have been identified or even persons of interest at this point. And police say that Ms. Gall was stabbed in her neck, torso, and left arm. She also had defensive stab wounds on her fingers and palms of her hands. Now, Ms. Gall's husband, Howard Klein, was out of town visiting colleges with their oldest son, Jamie, the night of the killing. The youngest son, Leo, 13, was home in bed. Leo was questioned by police on Saturday and then released. Now, Ms. Gall and her husband lived in a pretty nice $2 million home in Queens and were apparently well-liked in the neighborhood. Many described how kind she was, a good friend, and how she prayed for them in their times of need. Orsalia was a stay-at-home mom and traveled frequently with her family, often visiting her home country of Hungary. Detectives are investigating who Gall was with the night before she died. She had told her son that she was going out with a friend to a show, but unconfirmed sources say that she might have been with a man who was not her husband. Police did say that she returned home safely the night that she died. Now, police are investigating whether she met a stranger that night or if she was with somebody that she knew. A neighbor, a guy by the name of John Blankson, said that he saw Gall late Friday night walking their dog. He also said that everyone in his house was up particularly late Friday night, and surveillance footage showed, look at this, is this not creepy or what? It shows someone wheeling the bag containing what police say are the remains of Miss Gall away from the house about 4:30 a.m. on Saturday morning. Now, the person in that photo hasn't been identified, but is that not creepy or what? Does this have all the makings of a Lifetime movie? Yes, it does. Maybe some alleged infidelity, the husband away? Who knows where this could go, right? Like, geez. Obviously, we're not stating that anybody was involved because we don't know. We give everybody the presumption of innocence. But I think this one could get very, very interesting. All right, next on the docket, a 14-year-old who was not going to become a victim. A 14-year-old girl in Massachusetts warded off a man who broke into her house, and police say then eventually helped catch the suspect. Now, the girl was apparently sleeping in her home in Middleborough when she woke to the sound of an intruder. She saw a man stealing things in her house, then grabbed two kitchen knives and confronted him. The intruder dropped the items and fled, but the girl captured video of his vehicle and its license plate on her cell phone. In an audio recording released by police, a 911 call, you can hear the girl saying, "I got him out of the house. I scared him." She later said that she didn't have much going through her head and that it was mostly just adrenaline. Her mother also told news outlets that she grabbed two steak knives and started screaming at the intruder to get out of the house. The mother also said that she was blessed to have a daughter like her, obviously a very strong young woman. And the suspect, who they've identified as Joseph Ridge, who's 58 years old, he was taken to the Middleborough Police Department, where he was charged with aggravated breaking and entering during the daytime, trespassing and disorderly conduct. Now, the police chief commented and noticed that the courageous acts of the young girl, saying, "Even in the midst of an extremely scary event, her bravery assisted us in identifying the man believed to be responsible for breaking into her home." Now, can you just imagine in most jurisdictions, if you'd had more than just a knife, what you could have done? And it would have been completely justifiable. All right. Now, is it just me, or does it seem like the whole world is a much more unpredictable place these days? Maybe it's always been that way. I don't know. But first we had the pandemic, then you got supply chain issues. And I went to the store this weekend and literally the shelves were nearly bare. Then I see this morning that they're saying that Vladimir Putin is flying his Tu-160 nuclear bombers near the Ukrainian border, and they're worried about a nuclear threat. Now, maybe they're just training, or maybe not. Reality of it is at the end of the day, if something happens, you are responsible to take care of yourself and your family. The cavalry is not coming. You need to be prepared. How do you get prepared? So when you go to crimetalkprep.com, you can order. You can get a 3-month supply. You get $150 off of that order with free shipping. Now, you don't have to order 3 months supply. If it's just you, maybe you get 1 month. Or if you need more because you have a big family, get an entire year. The point is you have to be able to take care of yourself. And I think if there's any time in all of our lives, if we look back and said, "Oh yeah, we know exactly what's going to happen tomorrow," we would be fooling ourselves. You have to be prepared. It's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. All right, next on the docket, Cassie Carley. Marcus Spanavello, the man accused in connection with the disappearance and murder of Cassie Carley, was booked into the Santa Rosa County Jail Sunday night following extradition from Tennessee, and that's in Florida. Now, Carley's body was found in a shallow grave earlier this month inside a barn while authorities were executing a search warrant in Springerville, Alabama. Now, the Santa Rosa Sheriff's Office says that Carly's ex-boyfriend, Spanavello, has ties to the Springfield property. Now, Carly, and she was 37 when she disappeared, disappeared in late March after meeting Spanavello at the Navarre Beach for a scheduled custody exchange for, regarding their four-year-old daughter, Sailor. Now, Spanavello was arrested in Tennessee in early April and charged with tampering with evidence, giving false information concerning a missing person, investigation, and destruction of evidence. And the sheriff says that Mr. Spanavello may face more charges pending results of the autopsy in regards to Carly's remains. He's being held in custody without bond at this time. All right, this, I don't even know how to say it. Is this an evil 15-year-old kid, or is this a 15-year-old kid that's going to carry this with him the rest of his life, or maybe a combination of both? I'm not sure. You let me know in the comments. So a 15-year-old boy has been arrested for allegedly setting fire to his home in Georgia that resulted in the death of his 10-year-old sister in the whole process. Now, Zoe McHugh, she was 10, and she was found deceased inside her windowless bedroom after a fire broke out at the family's single-story Beaver Road home in Loganville, Georgia, shortly after 5 a.m. on Sunday. Well, the Gwinnett County firefighters have since said that they believe the fire was intentionally set, and police are investigating the girl's death as a homicide. Now, the unnamed 15-year-old was found safe from the fire in a different location hours later and was arrested. Charges against the boy are pending as police and the fire department officials continue their investigation, which obviously has devastated the entire family, not to mention the home, which also killed two of the cats. Firefighters arrived at the home shortly before 5 a.m. on Easter Sunday morning, and the house was already engulfed in flames. The mother of five and her two children escaped the fire before the rescue crews arrived, and the father and the other teen sibling were at work when the fire started. Multiple search attempts were executed to locate the missing children, and after the fire was put out, the 10-year-old female victim was found in the bedroom, as we stated, without a window. The boy was finally found at a different location without any injuries. A spokesperson for the police department said that at this time, it has been determined that the fire was intentionally set by the sibling of the deceased child and that the investigation is still ongoing. Apparently, there were smoke alarms in the house. However, they apparently did not go off. The father, Mr. McHugh, said that his teenage daughter was the one who alerted him of the fire while he was at work at the local Waffle House. He said that he remembered Zoe as someone who liked to take the lead and be in charge. Tragic situation indeed. We'll have to wait and see what happens to that young man. Not good. All right, a little side hustle gone bad, right? Everybody should have a little bit of a side hustle, right? But you have to do it legally. So a Florida man who ran into some financial troubles concocted a get-rich-quick scheme that would land him in prison for several years. This guy, Nathan Rodney Nelson, confessed to stealing or trying to steal at least 84 golf carts across several states dating back as early as 2017. Now, Nelson was arrested in Apollo Beach, Florida, but is originally from Minnesota. Now, authorities say he operated at night, hitting golf courses in the upper Midwest, where he'd take a pair of golf carts at a time. He'd apparently made common ignition keys, according to the court documents, and would start the carts and drive them onto a trailer. He would then change the serial number on the carts prior to selling them. Well, the FBI began investigating Mr. Nelson back in 2019 after the Cass County Sheriff's Office in Fargo, North Dakota, requested some help. 13 months later, the FBI connected Nelson to a self-storage facility in Illinois where eight golf carts were being kept. Then the police say that Nelson used an alias to rent the unit but provided his actual cell phone number. Cell phones, yet again, ladies and gentlemen. So police used the number to track down Nelson, and he was arrested in June of 2021. Now, Nelson pled guilty, and part of his plea agreement explained that he sold the golf carts for around $2,500 a piece, which is cheap, ladies and gentlemen. If you ever tried to buy a golf cart, they're like $10,000 before you like pimp them out. Seriously. And he was selling these in the Dakotas, Illinois, Indiana, Minnesota, Wisconsin via Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace. He managed to steal at least 63 golf carts totaling $283,000. I told you they were expensive. Well, the judge in the case pointed out the case is an odd one in that federal sentencing guidelines specified a term of 24 to 30 months, which is less than most state-level sentencing recommendations for such crimes, which is why I like the sentencing guidelines in the federal court much better on theft charges than in the state. Now, though Nelson faces state-level charges in four states, his attorneys expect that those charges will be dismissed. So, I'm just telling you, it's a good side hustle, ladies and gentlemen. A good side hustle does not mean stealing other people's property so that you make 100% profit. You have no cost of goods sold there, right? You didn't have any initial cost. It's a technique, but one that could get you in trouble, even golf carts. All right, do we have any dog lovers in the audience? Go ahead and raise your hands. That's right. Well, if you do, you need to order baked in Colorado CBD treats or oils for your dogs. That's right. Let's go ahead and let's take a quick look. Like many Americans, we got a dog during the pandemic. My quarantine dog, Miss Winnie the Bulldog. Now, Miss Winnie has grown accustomed to being around us all the time. When we were leaving the house, Winnie would have extreme anxiety, so we decided to look for natural products to help with her anxiety. We looked for the highest quality CBD treats, and we were not satisfied, and neither was Winnie. So we created a high quality CBD product that absorbs faster and provides the required results faster. Baked in Colorado CBD treats and beverage enhancers are made with nanotechnology. The nanotechnology makes the CBD extraction more pure, also allows for Baked in Colorado products to work faster. Baked in Colorado products can help reduce your pet's anxiety, ease joint pain, and help with your dog's skin problems. Go to our online store and see what Baked in Colorado product is best for your dog. When you order at bakedincolorado.com, enter code Winnie and receive 15% off your first order. We have a 30-day money-back guarantee. If your dog does not experience the desired results in 30 days, return the product and we will refund your money. No questions asked. All right, and finally, our dumb criminal winner from last week. Kiara Thomas was at her 12-year-old softball game when things got a little aggressive and she punched a volunteer umpire in the face. Gotta love a mom that protects her kids. And in her mugshot, she wore a shirt that said Mother of the Year. That was my favorite. I'm glad you all thought it was as well. That's pretty good. You know, maybe we should come up with a shirt that says Mother of the Year, Dad of the Year, Teacher of the Year. We come up with so many good possibilities. And since we're selling all kinds of stuff today, how about a little Crime Talk merch? Take a look at the shirt. Just arrived. It's always about the money. How many times have I said that? So many times we had to put it on a t-shirt, okay? How about this one? Our official theme song, Send Lawyers, Guns, and Money, ladies and gentlemen. Go to the link, get your merch. If you're coming to CrimeCon next week in Las Vegas and you buy one of those shirts, I'll sign it for you. How's that? Least I could do. And finally today, before we close the docket, a serial whipped cream pie thrower is on the loose in South Carolina, ladies and gentlemen. Be on the lookout. Be afraid. Police say they are looking for a man who started randomly smashing whipped cream pies into people's faces in Greenville, South Carolina. Now, a surveillance image has been released of the suspect. Take a good look at this serial pie thrower. He is seen smiling and holding a plate of his weapon of choice, whipped cream. Now, one of his targets was a woman who was pushing her child in a stroller on the sidewalks. Cops are treating the incident as an assault. Police say they received multiple similar reports occurring throughout the day. Let's see if we can help the police because, ladies and gentlemen, if you have serial pie throwers, where does it stop? It doesn't. Next thing you know, we'll have people trying to come up and make you laugh. Who knows where it's going to go? It just never ends. It's dangerous out there. Stop the serial pie throwers of the world. You can't do it. In all seriousness, he may be doing it as a joke. Who knows? I don't know. But bottom line is you don't go around touching other people unless you have permission to do so. And it is an assault under the law, technically. All right, hope you enjoyed the show. Let's go ahead and close the docket for April 18th, 2022. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.